it's overwhelming in the sense that you don't actually know what you're attracted to almost, you know, like you don't know what draws you in because everything is new and shiny and you don't know what it is. You don't know if it's the right thing. You feel lots of self-doubt. And then there's this imposter syndrome that comes in that you start telling yourself, like, I'm not capable of doing these things.
All right, welcome back, everybody. And I want to thank our listeners for coming back. And thank you, Danielle, for joining me again to talk about Paths to Purpose, which is, in my opinion, how to open up career opportunities with purpose. I'm Alan Jaglinder. I'm a professor at the University of Cambridge Business School, and I'm joined by
Danielle Edwards, and I am currently a law student at the University of Colorado Law.
Thanks, Danielle. Last time we spoke a bit about what we thought purpose meant and why we felt it was important to engage career paths with purpose. Did you want to reflect on any of that before we press on today?
Yeah, I think I received some really meaningful messages from some close friends and also from some just acquaintances of people last week that the message that we're sharing really resonated with them. And so I hope that as we move forward, we're going to be able to provide people with a meaningful way of engaging in this space. And I hope we continue to fulfill those needs for everyone.
Yeah, and I'm hoping people will be patient with us because I know this whole concept is overwhelming. There's a lot of risk aversion behind this as well. And we're kind of pacing this as best we can so that you guys could follow along. With that in mind, I think what we're planning based on last session is we kind of promised our listeners that we would offer some insights into how this process works, why it isn't that unrealistic, because a lot of people might think that this is totally unrealistic, but it's really not. And because you went through that process, I thought it might be helpful to put you in the hot seat. You have some experience being vulnerable. Yeah, you've been vulnerable in the process. And so I figured we could try to explore your own career path and give us a big picture of what this process is exactly and what you went through.
Definitely. Oh, so going back to the very beginning of time. So I was an undergraduate at the University of Colorado when I met Alan, and I was a junior in school. So I only had 2 years left and I was doing a business minor. But before I had gotten to that point, I had actually come into school and I was a pre-med major and my parents had both been in healthcare. So the only thing that I really knew going into college was medicine and kind of the benefit that medicine had provided, not only, you know, financially and stability for my family, but it also really connected with me deeply on the level of helping people and providing care to other people. And my mom had gone through breast cancer. And so it was like this very emotional attachment that I had to this idea of going into the medical field. Got to college, went into biology, hated it. And kind of from there, had no idea what I was doing. I ended up majoring in communication because, again, I liked talking to people. I liked the versatility of doing a degree in communication, and then also did business. And that's how I met Alan. And so at the time, I really truly didn't know what I wanted to do. I felt really lost. I was in public relations and marketing roles. I didn't know why I was doing them. They had kind of been easy opportunities in the sense that they weren't challenging to get in any sense.
But you were really good at it though, right? You were really good at it.
I was. I was good at it and I enjoyed praise. I really sought affirmation from others. So when people told me I was good at something, it made me think that I should continue to do it. And that is a fallacy. Just because you're good at something doesn't necessarily mean you will find it fulfilling in life. But I didn't know that yet. And so I sat down with Alan and I specifically remember, I don't know if you remember this day, but we had gone over to the engineering building and we had a cup of coffee and you had started asking me all these questions and they were really basic. And they were things like, you know, what would you be doing right now if you had no monetary constraints, no time constraints, anything like that. And I had never had any of these questions asked to me before. And I didn't have a lot of good answers. I kind of sat there and didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what you were doing. I was really confused because you had pitched to me that you did career counseling. And then you were sitting here giving me all these very fluffy questions, in my opinion. You know, it wasn't like any other career counseling experience I'd ever had where it was very quickly about, okay, here's your five ideas that you can go run with. And one question really stood out to me when we were sitting there that first day, and it was, what pisses you off? And I had been really getting into this space since I had gotten into college of trying to understand disenfranchisement in various underrepresented groups, in particular women. And I had experienced in my very short college career up to that point, sexism directed at me when I was in the workplace, and directed at other people as well. So I was really fascinated by the way that organizations worked and how they kind of contributed to this overall societal problem and just this larger global issue, truly, of gender inequality. And I had never actually talked about that before. It was kind of one of those things that I read books on and, you know, blog posts, YouTube videos, whatever, but I hadn't actually ever thought that I could make a career out of that. And so you kind of latched onto that very quickly and realized that that was something that I intrinsically cared about. And from there, we kind of started to figure out, you know, what does that mean? What can you do with that? But first, the first step before we even got to, you know, what could I do in that space, I had to do a lot of work of, you know, why do I actually care about gender inequality? Why do I actually care about disenfranchisement of underrepresented groups? And so, for next year and a half before I applied, I worked to kind of broaden my worldview a bit. So, the next summer, I worked at an internship in San Francisco, which was really meaningful because I kind of got to meet a different group of people out there and I got to see a different sense of community and just the way that a city can really change your experience and your work and the way that you engage with others. I took a trip to Tanzania where I volunteered for a non-governmental organization there that teaches women English, business, and vocational skills. And that was a month that literally changed my life. And then I came back and I worked at a government agency, which was not nearly as sexy as San Francisco or Tanzania, which was the Department of Transportation here in Denver. And that was one of the best jobs I've ever had. And it was so meaningful because I had a fantastic manager and I got to kind of on my free time go and research the gender representation at that organization at that time. And I was empowered to kind of put that into practice when I was there. And so I kind of had all these experiences. And from there, I was like, okay, I'm going to apply and go do this program. And that
So
was as far as I'd gotten.
I want to pause for a moment and explore day one. So one of the reasons I think, and I want to see whether you understand, like, why do you think I asked what you would be doing without constraints? If you could be anywhere without constraints, if you had unlimited resources, why do you think I ask it in that way? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think because it implies that you're not doing it for anyone else, you're doing it for yourself. And you don't have to worry about any of the things that traditionally, you know, if you want to think about who you want to engage with or a trip you want to take or anywhere you want to go, you can't undo this, you know, socioeconomic pressures you might have or the relationships that might impede you from doing that. But that's truly something you would do for yourself. And that's something that really speaks to what you place value in your life.
Did it change the scope of the view of the menu for you in any way? In what ways?
But I think the first time I was asked that question, to be fair to everyone listening, I've gone through this process at least three times in full. So this isn't like a one and done kind of process. But each time I've thought about that question, it changes. But the first time, I think I had never even been outside of the United States. And so when I thought of what I would do without any constraints, it had a lot to do with travel and seeing other cultures and seeing the world from a view that I had never had the opportunity to see yet. And then once I had, you know, finished my experience in London, the idea of what would you do without constraints became really focused on how do I engage with women in the space that I want to engage with? Because I had traveled and because I knew that that was already there, I could do that if I wanted. And then again, after my experience of leaving my last job, I ask myself that question again, and it changes every time, because you have experiences that maybe you've actually done the thing that you would have done without constraints, or maybe you just know that it's there and it's accessible. So you start to get more narrow in what you actually want to do, but it definitely changes over time.
So the reason I bring it up is, you know, you're in a generation now, your generation has the capability of literally going into outer space, because you've got SpaceX and you've got all these other initiatives. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I work with students, we all come in with constraints. We all come in with constraints in our brains, and we've locked down a kind of career path, or we've locked down to regional preferences or something like that. And I think it's interesting when you allow yourself to think broadly and think globally. And I think, based on your story, I mean, going to San Francisco, Tanzania, going to London for school, I don't know that you would have done that. Also, even working in a government agency is not something that you probably would have had in your purview without a relaxed, okay, what's out there kind of perspective.
Even the second and third times that I've gone through this process, it's overwhelming, just because you never stop having just tons of data available to you about what you could be doing. And you're constantly, I think, unfortunately, because of social media, because of kind of the way that society is currently, you're constantly comparing yourselves to other people your age, or other people who have gone to different schools or have different jobs, whatever it is. And it's hard, because you really have to tune all of it out. And that's really hard to do, because you either have, you know, family telling you something, or you have your friends telling you something, or you have this societal burden that you feel like you should be fulfilling. And our natural instinct is not to go against that. The natural instinct is to take the path of least resistance and to try and just go along and be happy with what you're given. And it's harder up front to fight that and to actually find what you really care about, but it's so much more beneficial in the long run, because you won't have the same just like melancholy from doing something that you don't care about. But it's an upfront investment. It's something that at the beginning seems impossible and seems like a complete waste of time.
Does it help to know that the structure is fundamentally, I'm going to figure out what I want to do, and then I'm going to find the projects and the people who are there? Does that help? Because you kind of understand the process now. Because I remember early when we very, very first started, when we were kind of circling around these existential questions for you, I called it, quote, the drowning swimmer phase. Mm-hmm. What do you have any idea why I call it that, or what that means? Did it feel like
just
that?
Because it seems like you can't latch on to anything, because in particular, in my case, the only thing that I had known going into college was medicine. And so to kind of blow that up in general was to open my eyes to literally everything that exists in the world. And it's overwhelming in the sense that you don't actually know what you're attracted to, almost, you know, like you don't know what draws you in, because everything is new and shiny, and you don't know what it is. You don't know if it's the right thing. You feel lots of self-doubt. And then there's this imposter syndrome that comes in, that you start telling yourself, like, I'm not capable of doing these things. Like in particular, and I know this is not something unique to myself, because I've, you know, worked with a lot of the students that you work with too. And it's this feeling of just like, this is all fun and games, but this isn't for a normal person like me to find. This is something that, you know, only a certain type of person can do, and I am not that person. And I certainly felt that, because it's hard and it seems like it's a pipe dream. And until you actually get to a point of understanding and calm, it will continue to feel like that. And that's hard.
Yeah. So the drowning swimmer concept is because it's weird. I've worked with thousands of students in this young age, and there's so much pressure, and there's so much uncertainty and financial insecurity aversion. Yeah. And I've seen it over and over again. And in the United States, it makes a lot of sense, the financial insecurity part, because of ridiculous student loans and things like that. But this uncertainty aversion, this need to know, I got to know now what I'm doing, for some reason, and in part because some of your friends have clarity and you feel left out because you don't have clarity. And mm-hmm. it gets people into what I call grab the closest life ring. I mean, if you're drowning and you're drowning in all this uncertainty, than the very first life ring that comes your way. And we see this in business schools, because we see lots of job opportunities pouring on our business students early when they're 18 years old. Even they get internship opportunities that are thrown right at them, and they grab straight to that life ring as opposed to doing sort of introspective work. And so why did you continue with this? I mean, because you didn't have to.
Yeah, well, it was rewarding. And I think to kind of go back a little bit to what you had said, to grab on to something that was there, that happens too. Like in my process, you know, after I had gotten to LSE and had achieved this thing that I had wanted for 2 years at that point to get to this school, I had to do this process again, because I realized that my goal had been to get there, and then I didn't figure out what that actually meant for myself. And I was trying to latch on to, all the things that you're thrown when you're in graduate school too. It's the same thing. It's like everybody's getting jobs. And so even knowing this process, my natural inclination was to go for what was easiest, was to go for a consultancy job, was to go, you know, work for one of these different companies that was constantly recruiting at LSE. And ultimately I went to Nike. And that was a decision that wasn't necessarily aligned with the things that I had known for myself, but that was something that I was trying to do to make some of my constraints work at the time, which were a personal relationship and, you know, trying to fit my purpose into like a corporate space, which ultimately didn't work. And that's not to say that, you know, different things don't work for different people. And that's not to say that I didn't have a positive experience with the people that I met while I was at that company, but, you latch on to things, and it's really easy to forget why you had started in the first place.
Well, I remember, if I can interrupt for a second, I remember specifically, sure. And I see this extremely commonly. I remember specifically that you became laser focused on that specific program at London School of Economics, which is a fabulous program for what mm-hmm. I thought you needed. And I hear it all the time. Oh, I just want to go to X MBA, or I want to get into this program. And I kept going, mm-hmm. Schools are tools. They're not destinations. So you learn at a university. If you're going to do training, you're learning in order to, it's a tool for a purpose. It's not a purpose. And so I kept wondering, like, well, okay, then what? Why? Again, it comes back to the why. Why are you doing that particular program?
Right. And I think that that's an indication of kind of what we're talking about. And it's the need to latch onto something certain and that desire to have something already figured out. And so once I had that school, it was like, okay, it's done. You know, everything else is going to be hunky dory from here, because I have gotten into this dream program that I really wanted. I was super excited to live in London. You know, everything was going to be fine because I had achieved the school. And as you just said, that's not true, because it is a tool, and it's the people that I met there were incredible and phenomenal. And it was more about the people than the actual, you know, institution of, you know, what that meant, because you can't achieve everything you've ever wanted just by going to your dream school. That's not how it works. And I was lucky enough to go, and I was lucky enough to experience that institution, which again, I loved, but I had to do so much more work than that. And the process was not done just when I had figured out that I'd wanted to go to that program.
Yeah, and I don't want to diminish the financial and the risk aversion on insecurity issue either, because I know it's in some ways it's a privilege mm-hmm. to be able to sit back and go, you know, I'm going to hold off. I'm not going to take this job that's in front of me. I'm going to wait and figure it out and do some soul searching. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't have that opportunity or can't afford that opportunity. And in some ways, I don't know that that's the right path to do that. But I do think it's important to take some time, even if you're working really hard, to carve out a little piece of time so that you can do the introspective work, so that you can figure out, okay, I'm here now, I'm making money, but is this really what I should be doing? And it gets into this issue, as we noted before, where if you're really good at it, it's really harder to leave because you're getting a lot of adulation around it. And so the key is, if you decide that you're going to take employment because it's financially secure and because it gives you some stability, it's easy to get sucked down the trap of, by the way, it's okay to do that, but it's easy to get sucked down the trap of, oh, I'm getting a lot of love and attention and promotion opportunity here. I think it's important to take the time on the side to do the reflective work about, is this really the path I want to continue or should I be looking for a pivot out?
That was something that I really struggled with when I was at Nike and when I was deciding to leave Nike, was that exact concept was, and I think that this goes back a lot to the appearance of things, because I had achieved, again, it was like I had gotten this amazing company who, you know, has a global presence. They have offices around the world and they are truly, you know, a recognizable name. And I was so proud that I had gotten into that company and I was so proud of the team that I was on and the work that I had done. And I was also miserable because it was not connected to me personally. That's not to say that someone else's dream could be that company completely. And I have so many good friends that are still there and they love their jobs and they have just the most amazing time. And the important thing though is it wasn't for me. It doesn't mean that it's not, you know, for everyone. But it was so hard to come to a decision to leave something that was so secure, that was so beautiful on the surface to other people. You know, other people didn't need to know anything about what I did. They just needed to know that I worked for a shiny company. And to leave that and not know what I was going to do next was the hardest thing that I have ever done because it felt like a complete failure and it felt like I was just falling because I had worked so hard to get to that point. And it's not easy to feel that you are lost again once you feel like you've worked so hard to get to there, because you don't know what's going to happen next. And so, yeah, that was a huge risk. And I want to acknowledge that, like, my availability to taking a break, to leaving a job, was all contingent upon having the support that I needed from my family and from my friends and financial stability that I had built up to that point. So, no, that's not possible for everyone. But I also want to acknowledge that all the feelings that I had of fear of failure, those all happen too when you decide that what you're doing isn't fitting your overall purpose. And it's terrifying.
So I'm gonna move a little bit. We've talked a little bit about purpose and how you found purpose, and now we're gonna move into sort of the projects and the people. And I guess, you know, we're relying this system, as we're gonna discuss in much more detail in future podcasts, about trust and developing trust with these people. We're relying on a presumption that other people are gonna gatekeep us in. They're gonna want to allow us in. And this goes back to your concern into the imposter syndrome and all these other things that people are like, well, you know, why would Danielle allow me into her cool opportunity? What do I have to deliver? So I guess, do you have a sense for what's in it on the other side? So why is it that people might allow other people into their little projects or their big projects? What's their
Yeah,
benefit?
because finding people who are genuinely interested in investing in the space that they are is rare. It is so rare to find a person who applies for whether it's a job or a project or even just something minor is like a conversation to have with someone and talking, having a meaningful conversation with another person who is also invested in the same space that you are. Is magical. It feels phenomenal because you just have this synergy between the two of you because you really understand each other on this most basic fundamental level and you have this human connection over it. And once you establish that, it's really easy to get involved in projects with that person in that space because they see themselves in you and they know that you will be valuable to the thing that you both care about. But as a person on the other side, it seems like, oh, I have no value to add to this person. But to the person who's letting you in, it's like, no, please come because we need people to care about, you know, whatever it is, whether that's environmental issues or, yeah, working at a sportswear company or something like that. They want people who are invested deeply and care about the same things that they do.
Yeah, and to be fair, you know, that's definitely true in low supply scenarios. Like if there's a demand for need, if I'm working on a project and it's very hard to find people who are super, super, super committed to my project, absolutely true. It becomes a little less difficult if there's a high demand or, for example, music industry or, you just watch American Idol, you can see there's a lot of people who want access to very few opportunities. And in that context, it becomes a little bit more difficult, but this process does actually still work in that context because then you're in a competitive environment. And to get past imposter syndrome, one of the things that we'll discuss in a future episode is how to develop trust, because that's one of the components of trust is the sincerity, this resonance with purpose. But then the other element is competency. There are four elements we'll discuss later, but one of them is competency. And implicit in what you had said is people really want you on the other side to support their projects if you care about it and you can deliver on it. And that's really the key that we're talking about here. It's more than simply, oh, I really care about what you're doing. Come like me. I want, you're going to let me in. It then turns into a massive work, which actually is a good segue into what you're doing now. We're talking about, I remember way back, I had suggested law school to you and you were pushing back on it, but now you're in law school. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that relates to what I just talked about with respect to developing competency so that you can earn trust.
It always works out like that, doesn't it? I had never wanted to go to law school. I had never wanted to be a lawyer. I had this really bad a stereotype in my head of what a lawyer was, and it was a person who, the Hollywood movies convince us to be is just someone that litigates and they're really uptight and angry all the time and they're in courtrooms and that's it. And as someone in law school now, I can tell you that that is not true. That is the furthest thing from the truth, and that law can be something really meaningful that's not in the litigation space. But the reason that I ended up getting into law school was because after I had left my last job, I had done this process again. And I kept going back to what do I care about? And it was women's rights advocacy. And for whatever reason, I had anchored myself in the idea that the best way to work in that space was through organizations, because that would have the biggest impact. Because, if you could impact, corporate culture in some way, that would just have a huge ripple effect. And that wasn't actually what I figured out after my first corporate experience. And that's not to say that that's not true, but for me, the value that I wanted to have in that space was truly on the advocacy level. And so I thought, okay, maybe I'll do a PhD in like gender studies or something like that. And you pitched to me, were like, well, what you're talking about is actually in the law. Like, you could be a legal advocate for someone. That is the truest sense of what it means to be an advocate. And I was like, oh my God, no, I'm not going to do that. That sounds terrible. And you pushed back and you said, okay, well, go find some jobs that you think look amazing and look at the qualifications for those jobs and look at the people who hold those jobs and tell me what they have. And I did. I went on LinkedIn and stalked some people, which is one of my favorite methods of building a path. And they all had JDs, they all had Juris Doctor degrees. And so my choice to go to law school fundamentally came down to seeing other people in the work and the projects that they were doing and realizing that my opportunity, my own path to being in those rooms and in those spaces and getting those opportunities depended on getting this degree. And it was never about, on the reverse. This was the complete opposite of going to the London School of Economics for my master's degree. This was like, I am going to law school because it is a means to achieving an end in which I already am going towards. It was not, I'm just going to go because it sounds great and it'll look cool to be a lawyer on my resume. And if it was, it would be completely miserable because law school is really hard. And it's something that, I fully enjoy right now because I know why I'm doing it. This to me has such a higher purpose. And so every test, every reading, everything that I'm doing is really hard in the moment, but it's completely worth it because I know why I'm doing it.
So it's funny because when we were doing the law school exploration thing, it kind of fits this whole narrative of this podcast series, this Purpose Projects People, because one of the things is people have, even I do, I don't know enough about law. I never trained in the law, but I know people have this sort of image of a lawyer, and it's a very generic image and they don't really understand it. But when I have done some research for other students, I've taken a look, and each university in the United States, their law schools tend to have a concentration, and many of them have research centers. And I, in the past, I've discovered, for example, that Stanford has in within its law school, it has a group of attorneys working on criminal justice reform law. And then if you're looking at human rights around immigration, I believe UCLA and USC both have a law center around immigration studies and immigration law. And there are people who are then working on these issues. And I know Stanford, I think, I keep calling it Kellogg, Northwestern law schools, they're working on securities law, for example, for business. So each of these schools tends to have, I mean, they all cover, all the laws from what all the legal stuff from what I understand, but there are pockets of research centers and projects within them, and you can understand whether you can mentor within them. And I think that's kind of what I was trying to illustrate within these, that you can find
Yeah,
people doing projects within each institution.
and that's the thing that you have to be sure before you pick a school. And transparently, I had been applying to a couple of different law schools, and one in particular had a program that was really specific to gender law. But the constraint for me there was financial, and I didn't want to take out $500,000 worth of loans. And I had to do the research to make sure that my opportunities and the things that I wanted, I could achieve at a different law school. And if the answer would have been no, I wouldn't have done it. But I have had the opportunity to meet with some really phenomenal professors at Colorado Law that are in the space that I want and that have had phenomenal training at, Stanford and Harvard and all these other institutions and that have brought that expertise to the human rights and the civil rights program at Colorado Law. And if that hadn't existed, I wouldn't be in law school right now at any institution, because you have to make sure that the place that you're going isn't just, I'm just going to go to law school for, for me. Like that would have been pointless to go to an institution and not achieve or not have opportunities to engage with the people that would get me to the projects that I wanted to work on. But I had to do the research to make sure that I could engage in the space that I wanted to, and that it would be worth my investment, both in time and in finances, to go to the institution that I'm currently at.
So, I want to thank you for telling your story. We're kind of running out of time on this particular episode. I'm going to close with a question, but first, I'm going to tell the audience that in our next session, we're actually going to be interviewing our first guest and digging deeper into introspection. So, this whole purpose part, we're going to focus a little bit more on introspection, authenticity, how to build trust, and the psychology of why people will offer support. These are the topics we're going to cover as we unfold this, with particular focus on purpose in the next session. Speaking of purpose, though, Danielle, I want to close on this. Last time I think you asked me why I invest in projects like this, but you were the one who created this particular podcast concept and drew me back into doing this. Why and why now? You're quite busy. So what's this purpose for you?
I selfishly have a lot of fulfillment when I see other people go through this process and when they have that aha moment and they start to engage in the space that really truly holds so much meaning for them. And I have had so many conversations with people my age that go the exact same way. And everyone's, confused about what they want to do. They don't feel like they have a lot of opportunities. They don't know how to engage. And I kept having the same conversations over and over and over again. And I just wanted to have a space where people could talk about what they want to do and how they achieved it so that other people could hopefully do that same thing and find their paths, find their projects, and find their people, because that truly to me has been the most meaningful journey of my life so far.
Well, I appreciate that. It's been interesting for me to do podcasts. I haven't done this before, but I'm looking forward to hearing everybody else's stories and putting them in the hot seat instead of us talking all the time. If you have any
Yeah.
questions, audience, remember you can email us at paths2, which is the number two, paths2purposepod@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram at paths, the number two, purposepod. You can follow us there too. Thanks, everybody. Have a safe week, and
Thanks,
we'll be talking
guys.
to you soon.